Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, it's not Chuck and Julie. The show's been hijacked by me, Mark Poff, again, coming from Monument Hill, just a little bit south of Denver, a little higher altitude. It's raining like we're in Seattle. I can't figure that one out. But I want to thank Chuck and Julie for giving me the opportunity to host the show. And I love the opportunity to let them go out and have some fun because they're kind of tied to this show on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So they want to go out and play some golf and watch their kid play golf. I can definitely understand that. So hopefully I can keep you entertained for the next hour. I'm going to talk a little bit about different kind of cases. John St. Augustine, probably one of the most experienced homicide detectives in the state of Colorado, who used to work with Lou Smith and some other highly qualified detectives in the past, is going to come on. And we're going to actually kind of focus on domestic violence a little bit. And the Gabby Petito, and then there was another case that just came up, Nikki, whatever her last name is, that happened just this last week, and talk about how law enforcement can really let people down when they don't do a thorough investigation. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about first, and if you want to call in, and you know, if you want to unmute and bang right in, that's fine with me. I'm used to, you know, like an old Marine. Well, I'm not an old Marine, improvising and whatever. So you just jump right into it. And we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. If you want to call in, it's 888-627-6008 if you want to call in. And I'm going to try to do something at first, which is a little crazy for me, because most people know that I don't really get into politics too much. I've made the statement in the past that I'm one of what I think is one of the few individuals that I'm not a never Trumper and I'm not an always Trumper. I'm kind of in the middle. I think Trump did a phenomenal job during his administration. A lot of great things happened for this country. And I would support him again if he was the nominee. But one of the things that interests me is I've run across individuals that are definitely never Trumpers. And I kind of have a hard conversation with these individuals because they don't listen to reason. And they just somehow, I think they've let the left or other individuals in their life. You know, I have to deal with a lot of liberals in my business, dealing with a lot of defense attorneys. And obviously, a lot of them hate Donald Trump. I just don't listen to them. So a lot of these individuals, I think they've just somehow locked into this never Trumper stuff, like Liz Cheney and her crew. And so I try to tell them, look, you need to let the process work, see how it plays out. And then if it ends up that Donald Trump is the nominee, you need to support that. Or what are you going to do? Vote for Joe Biden? That's kind of ridiculous. So this is my shot at this. I want to encourage people to definitely not be never Trumpers. I mean, that's ridiculous, but I don't want people to be always Trumpers either. I am going to embrace this season. I think some of the individuals who's jumped into the race, I mean, obviously don't have a prayer. So like any mini series or any show that goes on, you know, that I watch, and I watch a lot of these series and stuff like Yellowstone and some other ones, I'm going to try to embrace everybody getting involved and just see what they have to say and then see how this whole thing plays out in the next year to see who our nominee is going to be for the Republican Party, which I will definitely support. I don't think that Biden will be the nominee either through issues based on God, on life itself, or I think the Democrat Party is going to throw him under the bus. And I think they're already heading in that direction to change things up. I think they realize they can't keep the puppeteer around for another year, or the puppet around for a year. He's making mistakes, you know, and we've all seen this in our relatives and stuff. And I just can't imagine what he's going to be like this time next year, which is why they don't want to have any debates. So what are they going to do if Joe Biden is the nominee for the Democrat Party? And do you think there's any chance that he could debate Donald Trump at this point? He'd get his ass handed to him and he'd just look stupid. which is okay with me. I would, you know, enjoy that. So I you know, I looked today and I realized this is kind of out of my wheelhouse or my comfort zone. And I'm going to switch over here in a minute and talk about some legal matters, which is my wheelhouse. But so I looked at this whole list of who's running. Obviously, Donald Trump's running. We know Ron DeSantis is running. Nikki Haley, Mike Pence is probably going to get in the game. I'm not going to say his name right, so I'm just going to say Vivek. Yeah, and I probably didn't say that right, but I, to be honest with you, I like listening to his stuff. It's kind of interesting in some of the things that he has to say. But he kind of interests me like Rand Paul. Some of the things he says, it's like, man, that's really brilliant, a lot of this stuff. But would he make a good president? I actually think anybody who has a good conservative values would make a great president, so long as they can put the right people in the right positions and follow the course of conservative values. Tim Scott, who's one of the favorites I like. Chris Christie, I don't think so, but he's going to get in there. That'll definitely raise the, well, I'm not going to make fun of his weight. Aisha Hutchinson is in the race. John Bolton, wow. You know, I would love for John Bolton to get into the race. And everyone's like, you got to be kidding me. That's crazy. I think it would absolutely be like Saturday Night Live. It would be hysterical to listen to John Bolton talk. And again, Liz Cheney. I would love for Liz Cheney to get into the race. I think it would be downright entertaining. So I'm looking at it from an entertainment value. I would love to see Liz Cheney and Donald Trump debate. I think it would just be hilarious. Glenn Youngkin, who I really like. Kristi Noem, kind of like her. I think she made a little mistake on one thing, but it's not a big deal. Doug Burgum, it sounds like the Dakotas wants to get in the race. That's interesting. Larry Elder, I always find him entertaining. I don't think he has much of a chance. But I would like to see all these people get into the race. And some are kind of have the view, and I could be out alone on this, you know, like, well, I think it should just be Donald Trump. Well, let's just streamline all this process. I think through debate, I love debating. I love talking about the issues. I think when you iron things out, I think it kind of gets you to the best answer, the best solution. I that's one of the reasons, you know, competition is good. And that's one of the things that I love about charter schools. Well, I'm a big advocate of charter schools, because you've got to have competition in the race to get to the top. To, you know, this isn't a race to the bottom like the Democrats are doing. And what I find so interesting is who's basically their candidates are old white males, you know, old liberal males. It'll be interesting to see who else potentially jumps into that race as Joe Biden kind of fades away, which I think he will. But this is the whole interest about the debates. If the Democrats don't even have a debate, they're not even going to be on the stage. It's like no one's going to even care about the Democrat Party. The Republicans, though, should embrace this whole debate series. And I don't know that I really buy off on this. You have to make promises. Do you really think they're going to get Chris Christie or Liz Cheney, who I think are both never Trumpers? Every time I see him, I can't remember if it's CNN or wherever I see Chris Christie, my head just wants to explode. Do you ever see them taking a commitment or signing something saying that they will support the inevitable candidate if there's a good chance that it's going to be Donald Trump? They can't do this. So the RNC is, I guess, requiring to get into these debates. And there's some hoops that they have to jump through because they're afraid there are going to be too many people on the stage. I'm like, guys, you're missing the whole point here. Embrace this whole thing. Make it like a little mini series. Don't even let any of the networks even get a copy of the debates. Do your own streaming, make a multi-million dollar deal with like Netflix, Hulu, whoever, and then have the debate series. So it's like a whole mini series this summer through the fall, next spring, you know, run it like Yellowstone or whatever, you know, and just have your own mini series, make millions out of this mini series. Then have different formats for these debates, one-on-ones, two-on-twos, whatever, you know, like bringing into the ring now, you know, so it could be like a Survivor series. And then you have each one of them compete. I'd like to see Donald Trump and Joe Biden get into some kind of Survivor series, but like The Apprentice, maybe you fire someone every week and then they're out of the debate series. How about The Real Candidates of the Republican Party, like the Real Housewives. So you could put them all in a house and then make them hang out together and then, you know, have them interact around a pool or whatever and just see how that plays out. I think it would just be hilarious. Now, the Democrats could do the same thing. And what I would call their show is probably like, I don't know, The Walking Dead, The Last of Us. It could be like Yellowstone. And then at the end, they take someone either to the bus station or to the train station at the end of it. You could have the Weakest Link. See, I would love to see this. Get all the candidates and have them do like the Weakest Link. Actually put them on the Weakest Link and then, you know, see who's the brightest. Jeopardy, like a celebrity Jeopardy. Have a Jeopardy series of all the Republican candidates. Joe Biden would probably ring the buzzer about a half an hour after the show's over. That's how slow his reflexes would be. But a sports playoff series like football or basketball. Oh, you could have March Madness for Republican candidates. And so what I would do is instead of trying to have one debate where you put 12, 14 people on the stage, you're missing the boat here. You could raise millions of dollars by getting a hookup with Hulu or whoever you want to hook up with, and then start having this whole series and then put them in different scenarios. Have them, you know, debate one-on-one. Have a sit-down with a chair. Why would you just do like three debates? Let's do three debates. It's like, you know what? This should be survival of the fittest. I personally would love to see individual candidates go up against Donald Trump one-on-one. Now, I hear that Donald Trump saying, I don't even know if I'm going to do the debates. I think he will, because Donald Trump embraces debate and he embraces the whole process. You know, put him in a I still like it, maybe two chairs or whatever, and just have two of them talk and then, you know, run this. You don't have to worry about primetime TV. Screw TV. Screw primetime. Screw the media. They're a bunch of jackasses anyway that lie about everything. Why would you broadcast this thing nationally and let MSNBC talk about how crappy all the Republican candidates are and that they're all worse than Hitler or now Donald Trump? Because I think they're saying Donald Trump's worse than Hitler. So now the new matrix is you say, well, DeSantis is worse than Trump. It's a joke. Cut them out. Don't let them make any money off of this stuff. Do a streaming. I think it would be awesome. You could have this whole choreograph. You know what? You could end up dancing with the candidates. Do the last episode and see who can dance the best. You know, just embrace the whole process. For me, I want to see how it pans out. So for me personally, to wrap this up, I would tell you, I'm going to support the Republican candidate at the end of the process. Now, if you're going to ask me, is there any candidates you couldn't vote for? I'm thinking Liz Cheney and Chris Christie. Those two, I mean, definitely Liz Cheney. There is no way you could get me to vote for her. If she was the Republican candidate, which is never going to happen, I would pass. I would probably just check every other box. There's no way that I could color in that box for Liz Cheney. I just don't see me doing that. But I'm going to embrace the season. I'm going to see who ends up on top. So if somebody says, who do you support right now? I support them all. Well, I don't support them all. But I'm going to embrace three or four that I think definitely would do a great job as a president. They're all going to do better, other than Liz Cheney, better than Joe Biden. And definitely Kamala Harris. I mean, they're all going to do better. So that's kind of me. I'm not really a political analyst, but I think it would be freaking hilarious to watch this whole series of debates, like every Tuesday, you know, for an hour or two on the streaming service. You get these debates and then it's survival of the fittest. I think this is just a brainstorm, and I'm probably dumb as a rock, but it is what it is. So that's my little shot at my political for the day. I just think it'd be hilarious. So getting into law enforcement, I'm going to talk about this Clear Creek shooting, which some of you are probably aware of. I got to talk for about another 15 minutes until John St. Augustine can join us. John and I just have to tell you, we have been so busy with work. I'm in my basement again. If you don't know, this is in my basement. And the reason I'm here, I have an office downtown Colorado Springs right across. You know what? Someone just put something in here and I missed this name, Nikki Haley. Thank you for sure about That's another one. Hopefully I mentioned her name, but that's another one. I'm going to wait and see what she has to say. I don't like that she kind of went with Trump and abandoned Trump. That kind of scares me a little bit. So I'm a little hesitant there. But okay, I just hope I didn't forget her name in that whole list. So up in Clear Creek County last June, so about a year ago, there was a shooting. And hopefully I'm going to get this scenario right. Clear Creek County is west of Denver, kind of up in the mountains. So if you go up the mountains to Idaho Springs, it's part of Idaho Springs. And then there's a couple, I think it's Georgetown, and it kind of goes to the south of I-70 a little bit. It's up in the mountains. But the thing to understand is it's just west of Denver. So is that liberal or conservative? Well, it's liberal. I can kind of cut to the chase there. So what happened was somebody kind of went off the road and wrecked, and they called 911. They said, hey, can you send help? Okay, that happens every day. Middle of the night or early in the morning on June 10th or 11th of last year, the driver calls 911. It's a young male, and he obviously has some mental issues. He's not clear on everything. So the cops show up, and of course, and I watched one of the body cams. I had an opportunity to review it. And at first, you know, they go up and they start doing the normal stuff that you would see every cop do. They walk up and say, hey, how's it going? Well, it's not going well. I just kind of wrecked my car. It's off on the side of the road. Need a little help. And they said, well, hey, why don't you just step out of the car? We'll take care of everything. We'll take care of you. And he's like, I don't want to get out of the car. I don't trust cops. I'm afraid you're going to shoot me. They're like, well, we're not going to shoot you, which turned out not to be true. But for over an hour, they're trying to talk this kid out of the vehicle. Everybody shows up. So it's Clear Creek County Sheriff's Office. It's their jurisdiction. So they're in charge. And one of the things to understand, you know, I worked for El Paso, not much on the road. I was mainly a detective for the vast majority of my career. But even as a detective, occasionally I would pull over and help other deputies as a cover unit. And that's what you're called, a cover unit. So if you're not really in your jurisdiction, and in this case, this is who they said showed up. It was Clear Creek SO. It was their jurisdiction. Georgetown PD showed up. Idaho Springs PD showed up. Colorado State Patrol showed up. And the Gaming Commission agent showed up. I don't think anybody was gambling, but you know, a lot of these people that do gambling commission, they're bored, but they are sworn law enforcement, so they can go and cover. Now, probably the smartest people in the room in that scenario is CSP, Colorado State Patrol. So they all show up, but it's Clear Creek County SO's jurisdiction. So the others are just there as cover units to make sure that everybody's safe. So Clear Creek gets involved, and there actually is someone from one of the police departments that talks to them and actually seems to be very reasonable. But this goes on for over an hour. And one of the things that I've found in law enforcement is there really is no time limit, time period. It's not like, okay, I've been here for 30 minutes, your time's up, we're gone, or whatever. And that's not how it works. You need, sometimes people just need more time. And you know, maybe they should have tried to call his mom or whatever. You know, I'm not going to sit here and judge what they did, but ultimately they were in contact with their supervisor, a sergeant, Gould was his name, Kyle Gould. And this is kind of interesting. I didn't know this. He was watching the body cam video live. Sounds interesting. So he was watching what was going on, trying to interact with this young kid and get him out of the vehicle. Now, just to let you know, he did have a couple knives and a hammer in the vehicle with him. Supposedly from his standpoint, they were for geology type stuff. But again, they're deadly weapons. They are what they are. So after a while, they get frustrated with this kid. And see, that's the problem, is you got to just step away and just say, you know, what are we doing here? You know, what's our plan? It's been documented in some of the records that the two CSPD, or not CSPD, the CSP officers, Colorado State Patrol, that showed up, actually walked over to Clear Creek County and said, hey, guys, do you have a plan? You know, we've been here for an hour. You know, what's your plan here? You know, why are you even interacting with this guy? What crime are we investigating? What, you know, what are we doing here? And Clear Creek said, well, I don't guess there's really a crime, but we want him out of the vehicle. Colorado State Patrol said, you know what I'd do? I'd pack up and go home. I'd leave, which is probably the smartest thing that was probably said was, you know what, if he's going to interact like this, he's on the side of the road, he's off the road. If he's not going to let you help him, you know, I remember a couple scenarios that I had. One time as a patrol officer, I saw somebody that was like redoing some stuff on the roof of their car. Like they had some luggage or something on the roof of the car. So I pulled over and it was one female by herself and not the best neighborhood. So I pulled over and I walked up and she just basically looked at me and said, "What do you want?" And I said, "Well, I just want to make sure that you're safe and see if there's any help that you..." "No, I don't need any help. You can just leave." Well, guess what? I got in my car and I left, you know? And another scenario is middle of the night, and I'm doing patrol way out east in the country, out in the middle of nowhere in El Paso County. And I get a call from dispatch saying, "Hey, a guy just called in from this address and said if any cops show up at his house tonight, he's going to kill them. So we're going to dispatch you to that house." Okay. So I started going near the house, and then I actually stopped before I went on the property, got binoculars out, and I was watching the scenario. And I was just thinking, okay, so he calls up out of the blue, obviously drunk, saying, "If any cops show up on my property, I'm going to shoot and kill them." So we give them targets? I mean, you know, what's the plan here? So ultimately, the decision was made, you know what? Just let it go. There's no crime committed. Just walk away. Sometimes it's hard for law enforcement to just walk away and say, you know what? If you're going to be that way, you don't want our help. You called 911, asked for help. We showed up. You don't want our help. We're just going to leave. But that's not what they did. The sergeant said, gave them permission to break the window. And they always use the big words. The little word would be, and pull them out of the car. Extra whatever. I can't remember the term. So after a while, you know, they get frustrated. They have authorization now to get them out of the car, but they're still trying to talk to them. Then finally, they try to break the window. And that doesn't go well, but I guess they do finally break the window out. They end up shooting bean bags at them. I mean, you can just kind of see where this is going. You know, they have what they call less than lethal, and they shoot him with these bean bags as he's sitting in this car. Then they ultimately tase him while he's sitting in this car. And ultimately he turns and he has the knife. He has one of the knives and what's ironic is at the beginning of the contact, he agrees to toss the knives and the hammer out the window. And the officer who ultimately shoots him and kills him says, "No, don't do that." Okay, well, I'm confused. If someone's going to say, "Hey, I've got deadly weapons, do you mind if I drop them out of the..." It's okay, you know, drop them out the window, you know. But because they didn't do that, he still had this knife on him. So again, now you start questioning because of these decisions. You know, the officer says that he turned towards them with this knife in his hand, sitting in a vehicle where the door is locked. Figure that one out. And then they shoot him 5 times. I say they, one deputy, Andrew Bowen, however he says his name, shot him 4 or 5 times. It doesn't look good on body cam. And he says that ultimately that he felt threatened, or the other officers, he felt the other officers were in threat. So he did this while somebody was in a locked car with a knife. And then there was some talk that he was actually trying to stab himself, you know, but that's not really the scenario that I want to talk about. So I just let all in with all that. So they asked for permission to yank him out of the vehicle from a sergeant who now was watching it on body cam, but was now en route, I think via cell phone or over radio, said, you know, "Hey, can we pull this guy out of the vehicle?" And he says, "Yes, I will give you permission to pull him out of the vehicle." I don't know the exact verbiage. I mean, I could look it up or go see it, but whatever. Obviously, the end game is they charge the deputy with second degree murder. To be honest with you, let the court system work that one out. What my issue is, the sergeant who's en route, he's not even there. who says, I give you permission to extradite him, or not extradite him, extract him from the vehicle. At no point did he say, and oh, by the way, if you want, you can shoot him. I mean, that just never happened. And so they charged him with criminally negligent homicide. So let's talk a little bit about the different levels. Most of you probably know first degree murder. That everybody, you hear it all the time. First degree murder is you intentionally, with intent, after deliberation, you killed somebody. Second degree is you knowingly. So the burden of proof is a little lower. Then there's manslaughter in the state. And I'm telling you what it is in the state of Colorado. Then below that, there's criminally negligent homicide. And, you know, I still teach at the college for individuals who want to become cops. Criminally negligent homicide is your not action. In other words, you do something negligent, and because of your negligence, somebody dies. So it's not something that is a direct action that you do, but it's an action you didn't take that could do it. Like, let's say you don't secure your gun, or you don't secure drugs, and you have an infant, and the infant, you know, takes those drugs and dies. That would be considered criminally negligent homicide. You can go to prison for a few years. It's a felony. I think it's a class 4 felony. And so they charged the sergeant with that and reckless endangerment. I'm just stunned. It's like, okay, I get maybe he gave bad advice. I get, you know, he's not on scene. He doesn't understand the scenario. But at no point did he say anything about taking this individual's life. And I'm trying to think, what was his negligence? Are they saying that because he gave them authorization to extract him from the vehicle, that he, through his negligence, caused this person's death? He didn't pull the gun. He didn't choose to pull the trigger based on the scenario in front of the individual at the date and time that this happened. He's still en route to the scene. All he did was give them authorization to extract him from the vehicle, which, yes, I would agree, was not good advice. It was a bad move. But that doesn't qualify for criminally negligent homicide. So let's look at the players here. The sheriff of Clear Creek County, Colorado. The sheriff is Rick Albers. Albers, Democrat. District Attorney Heidi McComb. If I didn't say that right, nor do I care. 5th District, Democrat. What the Democrats have really laid out there is the fact that they don't care about their people. Now, the deputy who actually shot, I get that. I get that's problematic. And I'll be the first one to say that choice of shoot, no shoot is very problematic. But, you know, you got to be fair about this. That sergeant, you know, whether you fire him for a bad decision or whatever, I get it. But just this random charging of individuals, it's going to come back to backfire. And so I have a problem with this. I don't get it. This happens all the time. The overcharging of law enforcement, which this definitely is. If they charge the sergeant with a misdemeanor, reckless endangerment, I guess I get it, even though I think that would be a stretch. But you have cops that will occasionally use too much force, and they might get jammed up. And in the old days, they would get jammed up and they would probably get suspended, but no criminal charges would be brought against them for using too much force, depending on the injuries to the individual. Now, even if you hit somebody, you know, you've got a problem. And it's like almost to the point where you can't defend yourself. What I find interesting is they just settled, I guess, last month for $19 million on this case. And the settlement was with the state of Colorado and 3 municipalities. What? So they sued Idaho Springs because one of their deputies happened to drive on scene. They sued the state because Colorado State Patrol. Colorado State Patrol said, pack up and let's go home. You know, we don't need to be here. But the state paid some, you know. So it's just a crazy scenario. And we've kind of all gone to this one side. So that's just, I wanted to bring that to everyone's attention. And it's, these liberal DAs, if I was a cop, still working, and the sheriff or the chief of police, actually probably more of a sheriff, and the district attorney were obvious liberals, Democrats, I think I'd find another agency, because it's not that I'm concerned that I'm going to make a mistake. It's concerned that I did everything and my heart was in the right place, but because things just didn't work out. You know what? Sometimes shots don't go where you want them to, that they're going to leave you out to dry. And so you got to have confidence when you're in law enforcement that these people are going to back you up. And this is a great case of where, yeah. Okay. So the question here, I just saw this. Thank you for putting that out there. Who's they? Who sued? It was the parents of the individual who was killed. And it was Christian Glass, a 22-year-old who obviously had mental illness. His parents sued. It's just like with Gabby Petito. Might as well switch over now. John, I know John's on. If you want to bring John and throw him into the mix here. You know, John and I have done this for a while in law enforcement. And, you know, domestic violence is a tough thing to deal with. Are we still trying? Is John coming on here? I can never remember if how this works. John, I can see you there, buddy. You're in the little screen. I'm waiting for you to get to the big screen. There we go.
How's it going?
So everybody, here's John St. Augustine, retired commander of investigations, worked on over probably hundreds of homicides during his career. And I don't know if you would agree with me that one of the most challenging cases you can work on is domestic violence. It's a tough case to work on. I know when I worked the street, which was not very much, that it was tough to walk in. And then you have these two people that, you know, are at each other's, you know, wits or whatever you want to call it. And you're supposed to step in and just save the day. And it's tough to do. So, I started thinking of the Gabby Petito. And I want you to think about this, John. I'm going to hit you with a curveball. I want to talk a little bit about Carrie Nichols as well. And I know you have that case right up here. So we'll talk about that a little bit. But, you know, we had the Gabby Petito case a couple years ago. And then this Nikki Alcaraz or whatever her name is, where they thought, okay, here we go again. You know, it's another Gabby Petito where she disappears a cross-country trip. Okay, this is my first issue. You know, I've been married for like 25 years. If I'm going to go on a road trip with just my wife, I'm going to make sure everything is going to go right, because that's probably one of the most stressful things you can do in a relationship, especially if you've not been in a relationship for long. Say, hey, let's go take a 4-month road trip. So they're driving out west, and then in Moab, Utah, some people see something that happens. They call the cops. Moab shows up. They get the vehicle pulled over because it's a van. It stands out. So they find this vehicle. And then everybody's seen these videos. And I have to tell you, at the time, I was kind of shocked. It's like, this is an obvious domestic violence. And they wrote it off in their reports as a mental breakdown, is how they called this in their reports, as opposed to a domestic violence. But to me, that homicide probably shouldn't have happened, at least not in that scenario where they put her right back in. Well, they split them up that night. She stayed in the vehicle and he went to a motel, but they obviously got back together the next day. And I told a story about how years ago a deputy was called out to a party, and this young female said, look, I want you to go in and talk to my boyfriend. He's not treating me right. And the deputy was like, you know, you need to go in there and make up with your boyfriend. And then like an hour or two later, he raped her. So not a good scenario. So what are kind of your thoughts on dealing with domestic violence cases?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Mark, first, thank you for having me on again. You know, it's a lot like sexual assaults, you know, where, you know, the problem in it is you're taking the word of one versus the other, right? And you as a law enforcement official responding to this, you know, you don't know a whole lot of details. It's really, you know, all you hear is that, you know, one party is not happy with the other, and allegedly one party, you know, sometimes uses some type of level of physical force, right? So if you look at the Gabby Petito case, right, even the initial, I think the initial report was that some eyewitness saw Laundrie, right, the boyfriend, hitting her, yeah. Right? When the officer responds, it's quite the opposite, right? It's that she was hitting him. But like you said, right, I mean, something has to be done, because you don't want it to escalate to a point where, you know, the two of them, continue to use violence, or in an unfortunate case like this, where, eventually somebody ends up getting killed potentially, right? Your hands are kind of tied from a law enforcement perspective, because really, what can you do, right? So you have to kind of make a split second decision based on very limited information. And so what you really want, right, is for all the parties to be safe. So in hindsight, you can look at this Petito matter and you can go, this should have never, never should have gotten to this point, right? But what law enforcement did is they actually took the step of, okay, we're going to separate you, the two of you, because what you hope, right, is that over some period of time, cooler heads will prevail. Because in a lot of these situations, right, I mean, Mark, you've seen it. We see it all the time. There's a report of some type of physical assault, right, at home. And one party, once you make the arrest and they go to jail, at some point in the near future, they end up getting back together. And that's right. The difficulty, right? Because you can't order her to say, hey, you can't see him, and you can't tell him you can't see her if consensually the two of them want to see each other. And what it appears, and I may be wrong again, because I don't know all the specific details, but if you look at this matter, I think it was a situation where the two of them ended up wanting to be back together again.
Right.
Right. So, they're grown adults. How do you prevent that from happening? I mean, obviously, in hindsight, knowing now that she was killed, right, more should have been done. But what is more? I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know if you remember, Mark. I mean, a lot of the sexual assault cases that we used to get, it was always, he raped me, and he would say, no, it was consensual. Or she raped me, and he would say, no, it was consensual. It was always one of those things where, okay, now what do we have from a forensic evidence standpoint that would suggest anything anything that has actually happened? Well, in domestic violence, what do you have, right? They're arguing, tempers flare, somebody ends up hitting somebody. And so now what you're looking at is, did he really hit her? Or did she really hit him? And you're looking for what? Any kind of physical injury, right? Do they have a black eye? Does it look like they've been slapped, right? Does it look like they used some kind of weapon? But when it's absent of that, what can you do? Domestic violence calls. I mean, how many calls does an agency get on a nightly basis?
It's usually
tons.
It's a good percentage. It's
tons of calls.
And sometimes it's the same couple over and over. And that's how people say, hey, how do people get into law enforcement? Then they become so cynical. Well, the bottom line is the reason they become cynical is because they've seen it so many times. They've seen her constantly going back to him, and they go, well, here we go again, third time we've gone out there. And in Gabby's case, they left her in the van and he went to a hotel. She
correct.
Could have just driven away.
That's
and
correct.
Gone someplace else.
But she didn't, right? And I'm not trying to blame her. Right. You can't prevent two adults from wanting to be back together again. We see it so many times, right? There's a term they normally say, right? Like, it's typical victim of a domestic violence. They always go back to the person who hurt them, right? And for whatever reason, right? Sometimes they're financially dependent on them. Sometimes they have a family, they have kids, right? They feel like there's some obligation. But in this particular case, which, again, it happens so frequently, is like you're going into this call as a police officer not knowing what the background is, especially when they're traveling. They're in Moab, Utah, right? They're traveling through. It's not like you know a lot of their history, right? Unlike, let's say, they live in Colorado Springs or El Paso County, and let's say that same address, like you said, you get call after call after call, right? So you get that call history. Now, don't get me wrong, you can get some history, but the reality is, most of the times, if they're residing in a particular town, local law enforcement, if they're a frequent, we say frequent flyer, right? They're always calling. There's always problems. How is this officer supposed to know what was going on prior to this incident? How is he to know? Like, obviously, if he knew that Landry was going to kill her, he would have tried, or she would have tried, whoever that law enforcement officer was, would have made every attempt to prevent that from happening. I don't see... this is not it's not black or white. There's a very gray area that we're dealing with. And we have a split second decision to make when we look at two parties that are involved in an argument. Potentially it gets a little, you know, a little violent. Somebody throws a, you know, a punch or a slap or whatever. And now you have to make a decision of, okay, who's going to go to jail? Well, this officer, you know, he, if he sees that Gabby's the one that was hitting him, then does she, is she the one that should have gone to jail that night? Right. Even though the initial,
well, somebody, report,
somebody's going to jail, right?
Because the that, original phone call.
Yeah.
If I've got it right, the original call in, they say that he's hitting her.
Right.
Then when they show up, you can see the body cam footage. They're like joking around with Brian. And there's some statements where, you know, she's actually abusing him. But either way, with the way domestic violence laws are written, you know, somebody goes to jail.
Right.
And
I'll give you a good example. I'll give you a good example. I'll give you a good example. I don't mean to interrupt you. So I had an opportunity back in the day to work the Patrick Waugh. For those of you who remember Patrick Waugh, the goalie for the Avalanche, right? He was involved in an alleged domestic violence, right? And what it was he had basically left it. He didn't want to get into an altercation with his wife. And as he was going into his master bedroom, he slams the door really hard and the door comes off the hinges. Well, she calls 911. He didn't hit her, but she calls 911. Right. Okay. Now, you know, right? 911 calls. Even if you hang up, law enforcement is going to respond. Right. And they did. They came. And guess what? Guess who went to jail? Patrick Waugh. But the problem there is that, again, right, they had to make a split second decision based on very limited information. Right. They knew that she called. They knew that they got into an argument and they knew that he broke the door off the hinges. Well, here's that situation. You ask yourself, if she had ended up dead, what more could have been done? Or if he ended up dead, what more could have been done? Again, you're working with very limited information. And it's always easy for us, right, as citizens, to look back at these situations and go, law enforcement should have. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of things that law enforcement can do better. We always can strive to do better. But in these domestic violence cases, they're so difficult because you're faced with a situation where, okay, is it going to escalate? Is it going to escalate to a point where somebody's going to get killed? If we were to have to put every person that we think was going to escalate and potentially it would result in death, think about how many people would be arrested right away, Mark. And think about, right, even if they're arrested, it still doesn't prevent it from happening. I don't know if you remember the case. The lady's name was Raghunandan, and it was over, Mark, if you remember, it was on the east side of Colorado Springs. It was on Constitution Square Heights. And what happened was mom and dad were arguing, okay? Mom and dad are arguing, and son, who's 9 years old, reports that dad is hitting mom. Well, deputies go out to the house, arrest dad, right? Dad goes to jail. He's put out on a PR bond some hours, you know, it was hours later. Okay, he's out right on a PR bond. What does he do? He's told not to be around his wife and his two kids. Okay, so what does he do? He jumps. This is at an apartment complex. He actually jumps onto the deck, tries to open up the back sliding glass door, but it wouldn't open. So he goes back to the front door, knocks on the door, and while she's standing at the front door, he fires 6 rounds through the door and kills his wife. Then he kills his 9-year-old son. Then he kills his 6-year-old son, right? Everything was done correctly. He was put in jail the moment that he hit his wife, right? But who could have predicted, right, that he was going to escalate it to the point that he would kill his wife and his two kids? And so, you know, going back to this, that's why these cases, you know, we look at these things like the Gabby Petito matter, and we ask ourselves, what can we do better? You know, what could have been done better? What could have been done better? I mean, so he went to jail. He gets out. She agrees to meet up with him, and he kills her.
Here we go.
Yeah, here we go.
But then in that situation, you wouldn't have this huge lawsuit.
That's correct.
Because, you know, Gabby Petito's family is suing for $50 million against the Moab Police Department.
And I think part of the lawsuit is also against the family of
right. They have a
family, right?
That Brian Landry.
Yeah, Brian Landry's mom, I think mom sent something to him saying some letter, burn it after you get this, something to the effect of, you know, I would bring shovels if we had to dispose of a body or something of the, along. And, yeah. And a recent court just ruled again, right? It's crazy talk. But if this all happened before her death, how do you prevent this? The way you prevent this is what? You always tell the parties what? I tell you what, the best thing that you guys can do is just not be together, right?
Right.
Like break it up, right? And you go one way and he goes the other way. But what we find out in a lot of situations is at some point they end up getting back together. And then this violence just escalates to where it's at. So, right. You know, again, you know, it's like sexual assaults. You know, it's his word against her word. When you get that initial response, you're looking for any signs of actual physical violence. And then you act on it, right? If you see that physical violence, somebody's going to jail, like you said, whether it's her or it's him. But, you know, when you're getting conflicting information, like in this case, what do you do as law enforcement? And I would tell you, you know, I'm a fan of the truth. And we can go back and we can dissect this case. And the reality is, I think the officer looked at it and said, you know what? I'm separating him. If he didn't do anything, I think there would be more liability. But the fact right. that he made every attempt to separate them and go, hey, you stay in the van, you go to a hotel, don't meet up together, let cooler heads prevail. And then it doesn't, right? You can't stop right. people from wanting to
be. I mean, you're absolutely right. In these scenarios, so many times I've seen in cases in the past where they end up back together. And you're like, well, how can that be? You know, how can they be back together again? But, it is what it is. It's going to happen again, mm-hmm. you know, no matter what you do. And right. we definitely know that restraining orders does not stop anybody from doing anything they want to do.
Right.
One of the things from a humorous standpoint, you know, when I first went to the sheriff's office, I had to work in the jail for 8 months. And there was a guy there. I kept working the same ward. And there was a guy there every night, and he wanted to talk to me, and I talked to him, and he said, yeah, I'm in for domestic violence and, you know, violation of restraining order and all this other stuff. He goes, but I get out tomorrow. So I'm getting out tomorrow, and I'm going straight to Texas, and I'm never looking back to Colorado. I'll never come back to Colorado ever again. I said, sounds like a plan to me, you know, get away from the issues that you're having.
Right.
So I come back in the next night to work the midnight shift, and there he is.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, I thought you said you were getting out in the morning. Why are you still here? And he goes, well, I just wanted to call and say goodbye.
Hmm.
So he violated the restraining order by calling her, and he's right back in jail again.
Right. Right.
Sometimes you just can't fix stupid.
Well, and the other thing too, Mark, I mean, you know, these situations are extremely dangerous for law enforcement as well. I mean, if you look at just recently, right, the last police officer deputy to be killed in El Paso County was, I think it was Perry. What was he responding to? He was responding to a domestic violence, right? I mean, So again, right, I mean, people are just, they're not thinking rationally when their emotions are at an all-time high. Yep. And the reality is that, you know, again, right, you can't prevent adults from wanting to be together. And unfortunately, right, she should have gotten in that van and drove back to Florida, right, or New York, wherever she was from.
Wherever.
I think it was New York. And he should have just, you know, went another way as well. But they ended up together. And unfortunately, right, she became, you know, another victim of homicide. So it is. Those are tough scenarios to investigate.
That is true. So, hey, we're coming up towards the end and stuff. I don't think we're going to run it as long as we normally do. Mm-hmm. I feel like I kind of, you know, we got to come up with some better scenarios or whatever to talk about next time. But I will do my teaser for the next golf tournament that Chuck and Julie go to, and I get to guest host. If people are interested, I can go through the whole deal with the Black Forest fire and all that information. And I'll try to come up with some other cases that we've worked on. It's been a while since I've talked about Tom Clements and some of the other stuff, but you know, there's always something going on in the United States that, you know, we can talk about, even though it's not cases we work on right now. John, I don't know about you, but I've got two banker boxes filled with current criminal cases that I'm working on right now from the defense standpoint, which is really interesting. And you know, sometimes they get overcharged. Sometimes they should never have been charged. And so those are great cases to work on and stuff. So I'm sure we'll have stuff again in the future about sure. all these different kinds of cases and stuff. Is there anything else that you'd like to say before we break away?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know how much time we have, but I mean, you know,
a couple minutes.
You bring up a good point about the Black Forest fire. I mean, you know, we're coming up on
You're not going to give it away now, are you?
No. But I'm just saying, you know, we're coming up on 10 years on June 11th. And, you know, it was the worst fire to hit El Paso County, you know, and the problem with that is it was back-to-back fires, right? We had the Waldo Canyon fire, you know, in 2012. And then we have the Black Forest fire in 2013. And the unfortunate thing in that is that, you know, there's just so many things that I think could have been done that could have resulted in at least more answers that could have also resulted in potentially somebody being held responsible for it. And so, you know, unfortunately, it's been 10 years. You know, it's kind of like you look at JonBenet, right? I mean, I've been working that case since the beginning of, you know, since it began in 96. And here we are, what, 27 years later. And, you know, we're still no closer than we were then. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with really does that agency, the law enforcement agency or that district attorney, are they willing to really get the answers that need to be found, right, in an investigation? And what we're finding out, Mark, is, like you said, sometimes they want to go after certain individuals and sometimes they don't. And there's the problem is the consistency. There has to be some level of consistency. You and I talked about this on this show, you know, a couple of times ago, where we were talking about, you know, where you allow politics to influence a prosecutor, where you can have somebody get killed in the same manner, and one guy gets prosecuted and the other person right. did not.
And the other doesn't. And, right. and you know, you bring up a good point about JonBenet, and I almost feel like you can't not talk enough about the JonBenet homicide. I see these cases constantly, you know, when I'm out on the internet or working a case or whatever, they say new developments in DNA, you know, they find someone from a cold case 30 years ago. And every time I see that, I think JonBenet, yep. Why is the current district attorney and the current sheriff, police, you know, chief or whatever, it really goes on the DA. Why wouldn't you want to test this stuff with all the new DNA stuff? And you have these strains, and now you have, 23andMe or whatever. You know, even if we get a hit on a relative, that's going to be enough, you know, to solve the case. JonBenet Ramsey case is so solvable if it wasn't for the complete, total incompetence of the DA in Boulder County. I mean, I'm sorry to say that, but there's like hundreds of pieces of evidence that have never been tested for DNA.
Correct.
So we talk about the Black Forest fire, which I'm confident, you know, we could still solve to this day because we know who the players are. But JonBenet, we had DNA. And why won't they test it with like 23andMe and other stuff like that? We can talk about that later on and stuff. So solvable. It's just absurd why, you know, the DA won't do it. Wiser, that idiot, you know, and then Polis. Why they don't want to solve the crime at 25? I mean,
you got to be careful. I mean, you know, that's where, again, I how I am with politics. I don't, you know, to me, the local DA and the local PD have every ability to use, they have the unlimited resources to go out and pursue this.
Right.
And, you know, the governor, you got to be careful because, you know, there's been a couple of governors. I think Governor Owens was the last one that's kind of stepped in on this investigation. And he kind of stepped on his tongue there when, you know, he said, we know who it is and we're going to be able to make an arrest and all this other stuff. And it never led to anything. So it's very dangerous for me. I'm looking at it more from the standpoint of, you know, the role of the prosecutor is to seek justice. And the reality is that you have a little girl who was murdered 27 years ago, and there really has been a limited attempt to find justice for her. You know, if you look at that case in California, that D'Angelo, that deputy D'Angelo, former deputy who killed, he was the Golden State Killer. You know, that's all the accolades go to law enforcement and the DA's office for looking into that case and actually testing the DNA in that case, which led to his arrest. Right. You can say the same thing about the BTK killer in Kansas. You can say the same thing about Bundy, about Dahmer, about, you know, Ramirez. I mean, you can look at all the major, you know, serial killers. And I'm not saying that who killed Jomini is a serial killer. What I'm getting at is when you're willing to put resources into it, right, maybe put some fresh eyes on these cases, I think you'll find that, you know, you then get away from the political piece. And now it's what is the evidence? What evidence is there that supports, you know, who might have been responsible for that murder? But yeah, it's, you know, it's, I don't even know what to say, Mark. I think in some ways our criminal justice system is broken so many ways, you know, we just, you know, we hear about all these things that are going on in cases around the country where, you know, the resources are available, the technology is available, but yet too, there's a lot of pride that gets in the way of these DAs and these police chiefs where they just don't want to go out and pursue the truth. And really, to me, what's wrong with pursuing the truth? Is there any disadvantage with testing things and finding out who it belongs to? You may find out it belongs to the Ramses. You may find it belongs to whoever, but at least you're going to go out and test everything and let the evidence speak for itself, as long as it's been, you know, properly collected and all that. So, we like you said, we could talk for hours about Black Forest. We could probably talk for days about JonBenet, you know, and Clements. I mean, it's just, those are just some prime examples of cases where, how does an executive director of prisons get murdered on his front doorstep? And to this day, right? We're talking, that's already been 10 years. That was March 19th of 2013. And here we are, it's 10 plus years, and we're still no closer to making any arrest in that case either.
Right. Exactly. And that, obviously, we know that's a solvable case because we have a confession on video that they won't pursue.
Right.
Figure that one out. So maybe we'll talk about that one in the future as well. We are definitely out of time now.
Okay.
Listen in on Wednesday for Chuck and Julie. They'll get you back to all the cool stuff. But everybody needs to tell Chuck and Julie that we need to have these presidential debate mini series streaming on Hulu or whatever, and survival of the fittest of the Republican candidate. All right, everybody have a great day. We'll see you soon.